You're listening to the Lake Highlands podcast for May 1st, 2012. I'm Carrie Mitchell, one of the editors at Advocate Magazines, and with me today are regular podcasters, Ellen Raff. Ellen, good to see you.
Good to be here, Carrie.
And Carol Toller. Good to see you, Carol.
Hi, thanks.
I'm lucky I can see them. I'm sorry that you can't, but you can listen to us. Today we're going to talk about a couple of things. The first is that we had a cover story this month for the May magazines. Hopefully you've received it on your doorstep by now, about weekday warriors, high school seniors who have beaten the odds to succeed. We're also going to talk about what seems to be kind of a quote-unquote movement, for lack of a better word, in churches in our neighborhood to get outside of their buildings. They're no longer necessarily expecting people to come into their buildings, but rather to go out. And so we're going to talk about that trend and what it looks like and maybe what it means. But let's start with weekday warriors. In our magazines this month are four seniors at Lake Highlands High School who have, when you read their stories and you just think, how are these kids so successful? And what's amazing to me is this is just a small, slim sliver of the stories at the high school. We have only so much room in the magazine, so we can't tell them all. But it never ceases to amaze me, these kids that just decide they're going to beat it and succeed. It's incredibly humbling and makes me cry every time I read it.
Well, and the thing I love about this annual magazine article is that it's able to go so much in depth. I was at a Lake Highlands Women's League event where they announced 34 scholarship winners. And all four of the children profiled in Advocate Magazine were winners of the Women's League Scholarship. So that was exciting. And they all had their name called, and all the kids were there. And so I got to see the kids, and I got to meet two of them. But it was so brief. I spoke to them a little bit, but it was so brief that I didn't get to hear that much. And the kids aren't going to brag on themselves. And they were so cute and everything. But to really read the in-depth articles, and Christina did such a fabulous job, that to hear that story, it is so amazing. And, you know, it makes me just want to dump my kids out of their bed. I'm going to get Jim Kratz, the physics teacher at Lake Highlands High School, to come to my house this summer and build a catapult device on my kids' beds so that at 8 a.m. an alarm goes off and 90 degrees catapults their beds up so that they will get out of their beds. These kids are so industrious and so determined and work so hard against all odds. It's really amazing.
It is really amazing. I know that I loved that seeing your post on the website and seeing that there were a couple of those girls that were in the story that you wrote about. They just seemed so grateful, too.
They were so grateful, and they were such bundles of energy. And they talked to me about how they had been praying that they wanted to receive the scholarship. And so these three girls have been praying since they filled out the form and the application and done the interviews. And they were very eloquent. And I just walked away thinking, each of them individually, I bet their SAT scores were higher than my two sons combined. I bet you anything.
I have a question. And for filling out the scholarships, and do they get help with that, or even knowing about the scholarships, do they get help with that?
The Women's League Education Committee goes into the English classes, all the English classes at every level, and does a little explanation of what's involved and what's required. And that's an encouragement. And they want to let them know that it's not just a scholarship for the upper echelon of grades or achievement or activities, but that there really is a place for a lot of different kinds of winners, and not every applicant is included or excluded for whatever reason, that there really is a lot of diversity within the winners, you know, lots of different reasons for getting the attention of this committee. And the women, before the kids came down, the women on the committee were all calling the kids by name and recalling from the interviews what the kids' answers had been. These women had gone away from the interviews so touched by the kids. They said it was, they were like, they had become like their own children, and I think they really meant it. They were talking about what the kids had done and said, recalling it as if it was yesterday and it had been a month prior. They just really touched them in a way. It was amazing to me.
What's the story that gives you the most inspiration?
The ones that come over from a foreign country, and there's a whole bunch of them. There were 34 winners from the Women's League Scholarship, and there were several who had come up from other countries. And a lot of them, the parents still to this day speak no English. And so it's the child who's having to fill out all the forms and all the college applications and all the scholarship forms and all that. You know, I think about my oldest daughter was invited to an ice skating party one time when she was in about the second grade, and she didn't know how to ice skate, so I hired someone to teach her how to ice skate before the party because I didn't want her to have the humiliation of going to a party and not knowing how to ice skate and falling down. And I'm not embarrassed that I did that because she had a nice time at the party, but to think of the incredible adversity that these kids, to even be able to go to school and understand what the teacher is saying.
Well, I guess
the competitive disadvantage that they have.
The thing that is that sounds like it's really, or that impresses me just from hearing you talk about it, is that I'm still like impressed that they filled out these forms, and because anybody who's gone with the kids, you know, through high school knows that filling out these scholarship forms towards, you know, in the last year, even as if a parent helping the kid, is you get burned out on that.
It's true.
But so I almost wonder if coming from another country and just having that fire to, you know, just really succeed here just really helps a lot. And also to what you were saying, I mean, I have a form at my house right now, an application for employment that my son hasn't gotten around to filling out. So I know this is a life skill, and by gosh, I'm just not going to do it for him. So, but I'm going to make him do it tonight.
It's also true that Lake Highlands High School has Dr. Brenda Prine, who's the executive director of the College and Career Center, and it is her job to help with a lot of those forms, and she does a great job. But I do think that there is an industriousness to these kids who want it that badly. And in their mind, I'm not going to college if I don't get this scholarship. Whereas in the mind of a lot of our children, a lot of these children who have two parents who both went to college, since the time when their parents were reading them Goodnight Moon to go to bed, their parents told them, you're going to college and I'll find a way to make it happen, and all you have to do is make the grades to get in. I'll find a way to pay for it. So that's a different thing.
Okay, I have a question though, because I don't know the stories of these kids, but I'm wondering, are there some that you see who were raised here who have just come out, you know, just to overcome some odds?
Well, there are, and even some of them that aren't on this list come to my mind. For instance, there's a darling girl, Emily Obenhaus. She was not eligible for the Women's League Scholarship because her mother is a member of Women's League. Rebecca is her mom's name. She works at White Rock Elementary. But Emily is a cancer survivor. She's a Make-A-Wish recipient. At the end of her freshman year, she was diagnosed with cancer. She's the one that Cats for the Cure was founded around. The volleyball team does that. She was a member of the volleyball team, and the class of 2010 girls started that. Rachel Zreet was particularly the founder. She overcame cancer. She's graduating this year. She's going to UT. She has a 96 GPA. She's in the top 10% of her class. And she is headed off to UT, and thank heaven she's healthy as can be. She's beautiful. To look at her, you'd never know she'd had any adversity. But there was a long period of time when, to tell you the truth, we just thought we might lose her. And she couldn't go to school for a lengthy period of time. And she has recovered fully, thank heaven, but she overcame great adversity, and she's one of these that, you know, most people don't even really know her story, but she overcame great adversity.
I do love the stories, and I get to read
all of the stories in all of the neighborhoods where we publish, and the stories of overcoming tragedy are always incredibly moving to me. I always end up just bawling, crying. I can't comprehend that. I've never experienced, you know, a parent dying or a sibling dying or just some sort of, we've done stories about kids who are in, you know, accidents and, I mean, things where you almost shouldn't be here today kind of stories. And then somehow they're able to take that. And I don't know if it's a sense of gratitude, you know, I mean, they've somehow gotten to a place where, you know, I'm thankful to be alive and I'm going to, in life is short and fragile and I'm going to live it to the fullest kind of idea. I feel like if I were in that situation, I would just shut down. But, you know, there are people and some of these students who take it and go, well, you know, this is all I've got and I'm going to do the best I can with it.
Or it would also be easy to say, you know, I've fallen behind in school. My grades have fallen behind. I'll never be able to be in the top 10%. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll never be able to have an A average. So why even try?
Right, right.
That would be easy to slip into too.
Right. Yeah. Lots of great stories. If you have not received the magazine this month, make sure you open it and read it. We'll be covering the scholarship awards banquets. Carol will definitely be at the Lake Highlands Women's League it's the 18th?
May 18th at the Freshman Center, and also the Exchange Club event too. I think it's May 4th. Their event is always a big deal too. Mm-hmm. They have some scholarships that are set aside specifically for, I don't know how they word it, but it's basically the average student, you know, kind of the B student who's just a good all-around kid who's kind of pledged to behave themselves. I love that they, you know, they reward a lot. They reward the top GPA student, but also, you know, kids that are active in activities and clubs and stuff. And, you know, they try to reward a diversity of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. So, and they give a lot of scholarships as well.
Scholarships.
A lot of money and a lot of different children are recognized. So that's cool.
And it's fun because this is always, I mean, I know that there are other charities and whatnot that both the Women's League and the Exchange Club give to, but it's always fun because this time of year is the culmination of all that hard work, of all those events, of, you know, home tours and parties and Oktoberfest and whatnot. And, I mean, those were a blast to just be part of. And then now we get to see the results and these kids who are going to go to college and, you know, change the world.
Absolutely.
It's great.
Well, one more thing, too. Even if you know your family can afford college, you know, my son Ben got a scholarship from Exchange Club, and it still is a confidence building thing. You know, right before you go off to college, this fine group of mentor individuals says, "We believe in you," and the money helped. But, you know, Toby Toler said, thank goodness we got that check. But also, it really helped Ben. It helped his mental attitude to have these. Exchange Club is primarily a group of men, and they kind of wrapped their arms around him and said, Ben, we believe in you. And it did a lot for Ben.
That's great. That's great. I'm sure if I go, I'm hoping to get to go to at least one of the banquets, and I'm pretty sure I'll cry all the way through it. So bring Kleenex if you decide to go. We'll post details of the events on the podcast post, because I think that other people are welcome to come and watch the award giving, so that'll be fun. Well, let's move on to our second topic. Carol wrote pretty recently on the Lake Highlands website about her own church, Lake Highlands United Methodist Church, who, I can't remember what you guys called it, but basically left the church on a Sunday morning and did all kinds of service in the neighborhood and surrounding community. I wrote just today about another church, Lake Highlands Presbyterian, that's doing kind of something similar this coming Sunday. There are other kinds of activities like this and Sundays like this. I know there are other churches in Lake Highlands that have done this, and I'm going to fail to remember which ones those are, so forgive me and please let us know if you are one of them. But this seems to be kind of a movement, for lack of a better word, that is happening. Churches are deciding, you know what, we can't just stay in our building. There's more to it than that. It's a really interesting trend to me, and it's something that kind of gives me, I'm loving it. I really think it's a great thing. Carol, tell us a little bit about the Lake Highlands Union Methodist Church day and kind of what inspired that to begin with, and maybe what was the result that you saw?
You know, I think that church has done a lot of soul searching about, as some of the demographics of Lake Highlands United Methodist Church have changed. And what do we want to be, and who do we want to serve, and where are we headed, and is our membership past, present, and future, and what do they want? And I think there's been as some young new members have come in, which is what every church wants, let's be honest, it's a neighborhood where, you know, there's a lot of new young couples moving into Lake Highlands, but it's traditionally been a place where people have stayed in their homes and not moved. And so you kind of have, you know, people that their kids graduate from high school, move off to college, and the people stay in their homes. So it's Lake Highlands is a funny neighborhood like that, that, you know, we don't, you know, our churches and our schools can be stagnant at times because there's not a lot of new people moving in. So I know there's been a desire to attract new young families to the church. And so there's been some soul searching about what can we do to attract those people. And a lot of young people say, I want to do something with my faith. I want some activities. I want to do more service. I don't want to stand in the pew or sit in the pew and sing the same old hymns that my grandmother sang. And I'm vastly oversimplifying, and I hope I'm not offending anyone, but that is an oversimplification of some of the questionnaires that have come back, not just with that church, but kind of nationally among lots of different faiths. And I think this trend of getting out into the community and serving is kind of a national trend, too. It's not just a local thing, because I've heard other churches have tried it to great success. One thing I liked about Lake Highlands United Methodist Church's program was the service was a lot of different things. It was projects at the church, but also at neighborhood parks, at neighborhood schools, a race that was out, you know, on Turtle Creek in Dallas. There were a lot of different places and a lot of different projects you could do to serve. And I think the membership liked that because everybody could find something that they enjoyed doing, something that kind of fit their causes. And so the people who sometimes don't show up for church because they're out doing a run kind of all went and did the race, or they were not running in the race, they were serving water to the runners. Or if that, you know, the ones who sometimes miss church because they're out gardening were doing gardening and landscaping for a local park or a local school. And so it kind of incorporated what your interests are with a way to help and serve. And so I liked that it was a meshing of the work of the church, but also of the work of the community. And there was a lot of bonding, and you would see a 12-year-old serving with a 75-year-old. You know, there was a lot of intergenerational bonding, which was fun to see, and it made a lot of sense.
I really loved that, hearing that about the intergenerational part, because it's not that often that we get different generations together. And even at church, normally, the kids will be off in a different area, usually, than the regular worship service. So that sounds really wonderful.
Well, especially these days when you have a contemporary service and a traditional service, even a lot of times the same family will have the parents in one service and the kids in another service. So it really was a neat way to bring different generations and different groups together. I think it's a good idea. You can't do it every Sunday, but yeah. It's, you know, you have a few of those a year or a few of those over a 10-year period. And I guess in the old days we would have, you know, barn raisings and 4th of July picnics and a lot of events over time where people would all get to know each other better. It's harder to do that today, I think. And I think, you know, the average couple, 35-year-old couple, is asking, you know, about relevance. And this is kind of the answer to that.
Yeah. Now, I having already said that, gee, that sounds really great, I wasn't there. You know, I mean, I've done some service with my church, and quite often I'd be the one kicking and screaming, saying, I just don't want to take my hammers and my hearts, and which we call hammers and hearts. But anyway, I've done some of it and, you know, had my heart warmed, but I'd rather, frankly, go to church. Mm-hmm. So I can see the need for both.
It's been interesting to watch this and kind of see, there's kind of this balance. I mean, the worship service or the community worship has always been very crucial to churches, to houses of worship. It's a time for the community to come together and to kind of remember why they exist. And it's interesting because there's part of me that wonders if we have always tried to combine, we've been doing this for a few decades, I wonder, you know, trying to combine this, the service for the community as well as the service for the community of worship as well as the service for the community in one service. And I think churches, you know, for a very long time, you just assume they're going to come to you. When Lake Highlands was built, I wrote a story about this two or three, four, not really sure how many years ago now. And at the time, it was a new, growing community. And so churches were going up like crazy to match the number of people who were moving into the neighborhoods, or the houses that were being built, essentially, and people moving in. Well, that was 50 years ago, and now it's not as likely either in our society today, you know, overall, like you said, national, Carol, for people to just walk into the doors of a church. And so churches are kind of thinking, well, if we're going to be relevant, we're going to have to get outside of our church. At the same time, it seems like both are necessary. You're right. You can't do this every Sunday. There's a need for both. But I like that churches are kind of saying, this is a way, you know, a lot of times all people have is a few hours a week for church. That's all they can give. And so this is a way for the community as a whole to get outside of the sanctuary and kind of serve together, which seems to be a really energizing kind of thing too, if I'm not mistaken. Sure, it's tiring to do some of the things that they were doing, but
for some people, you know, when you go home at 2 p.m., you think, here's what I've accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
And for those people, after a worship service, perhaps they don't feel they've accomplished anything. You know, the traditional way it would, I'm sure the preacher would say that's not the right way to look at it.
But I'm sure there are, she or he would, yes.
I think there's a segment of the population that likes the idea of having accomplished something, mm-hmm. and
well,
done some good.
I just
good.
Have to speak up. Are we saying that now that we've, you know, we've come this far that we can't even, like, do anything as Americans without checking off some list? I mean, we ought to be able to take that seventh day of rest.
Yeah, I mean, there should be. I don't know who listens to this podcast. We'll see. But I have been part of houses of worship that are just more interested in getting together and serving each other than serving anybody who's outside the church. And they always expect anybody outside the church to come to them as opposed to doing the opposite. And I think that can be really stifling at times. And I think that can be, you know, I think it kind of misses the point in a lot of ways about what church should be. So I don't think we should look at our weekly worship gatherings as a way to be productive and accomplish something. In the same reason, I don't think that you can have a worship service that necessarily is for the community and for the outsider all at the same time. Sometimes that does not work. But I think it seems to be that this has been a good reminder, whether it's a Sunday morning event or whether it's a, like I think you had mentioned earlier before the podcast, yeah. The Highlands Cafe has a Faith on Tap event. Is it weekly?
No, I think it's monthly.
Monthly.
And I only know about it because I have a relative who works at Highlands Cafe. But it sounds like it's an event where they get together and have topics and maybe some fun discussion and maybe mm-hmm. some music and bring it back around to talking about how it's relevant to their religion. And so that's more like a prayer meeting or something mm-hmm. different than, or it's something that's interactive, not like a worship service.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, just a traditional grounding. Christians generally have always wanted to, I think, had that value of serving others
mm-hmm.
who have various needs, not just being in a Christian community, but mm-hmm.
and there's a fellowship to it,
yeah.
which is another kind of element of Christianity. There's another fellowship opportunity that's coming up. There's the University Park United Methodist Church is working on a coffee house that will be open to the whole Dallas area. I think it's going to be targeted towards college age kids. It should be opening approximately June 1st. It's going to be near SMU, off of SMU Boulevard, but when it's during the summer, it'll be a great place, I think, for college kids who've come back to Dallas to gather and have coffee. It'll be run by people from the church and other people of strong faith who will kind of be the baristas and welcome the kids in to come and study or do whatever they're doing. And then during the school year, it's expected that it'll be primarily SMU students. But it sounds like a great way, again, to kind of get out of the church building and reach people where they are and talk to them about whatever they want to talk about, but kind of religious issues, faith issues, what's going on in your life issues. And I think it would be a fun place for Lake Highlands kids to go and hang out.
Right. That sounds really good. I just want to say I'm the one who just made a Christian-centric remark. And because that's where my faith comes from. But I'm pretty well aware that there are other faiths that that do good works in the community.
Definitely. I was going to say, a couple years ago when I did that story, especially people of the Jewish faith have always been incredibly good at acting out social justice. It's a very important thing in that tradition. And I think I will say we, because I am a Christian, we're catching up in some ways to the amazing things that have been done over, centuries. I don't know when or if, I don't think it's all churches. I don't think it's all denominations or all houses of worship, but it seems like we have gotten a little, in inner focus. There has been this kind of trend toward an inner focus. And truthfully, it's real easy to get involved in anything, whether it's a church or an organization or a nonprofit or your job or whatever, and that just become your world, and then hard to see outside of it. And what I like about this movement is it's a glimpse of what's beyond these doors.
And really, a few years ago, 10 years ago or so, the trend was toward more inward focus, where there were these mega churches being built, and inside there would be a coffee house and a movie theater and a bowling alley and whatever, and you didn't ever have to go outside the walls of the building for your social life or your worship life or your study life or your school life or anything else. And so I think in some ways this is the opposite. Let's get out of the building and out into the community and do something.
It's almost and I don't know if I would take it this far, but it's almost a backlash.
It is.
Backlash. And you're talking about young people you're seeing in churches these days who are going, I want to do more than just sit in a pew. If I'm not mistaken, those were the same kids who had to be at church almost 7 days a week to do mm-hmm. one of many activities that the church was doing, or else you weren't really part of,
And it's a very welcoming environment when someone's hammering a roof or doing landscaping or cleaning up a park. Your help will be welcome. No matter who you are or what you look like or what your faith or whatever, if you're picking up trash out of Moss Park, they're going to say, come on.
Yeah, that's true. Well,
your help is always wanted. You don't have to know the hymns. You don't have to know the reply.
Yeah. And you can be, you can be somebody who goes to Moss Park all the time and you're already comfortable there. Whereas, I've had lots of friends tell me they can't even walk into a church without just getting panic attacks. Mm-hmm. And it's just, unfortunately, that's the way it is sometimes. And so I very much believe in that whole go, go. The church has to go outside. And almost moving back to the roots of, not really we're getting to home churches, but I mean, that's kind of how the church started.
Sure.
And it's, I don't know.
And nobody cared if you were wearing a silk dress or pantyhose. You could go no matter what you were wearing. Well, okay, we don't wear pantyhose, but some people might.
That's true. It's turned into Spanx these days,
okay,
maybe.
Yeah.
Really,
you can wear whatever you want.
Whatever you want. Okay, good. And you better not be wearing a dress if you're going out and working in a park on
Sunday.
That's
right.
Well, do we have any shameless plugs this week?
Well, I know that at the Dallas Arboretum this Saturday, May 5th, the Chihuly exhibit is opening. It's going to just be fabulous. And I know also on Saturday, the red-white game is going to happen. That's always so much fun in Lake Highlands. That's the annual spring football game. So that'll be really fun. And also on Saturday, Enchilada's restaurant is having a enchilada eating contest. So that will be a lot of fun.
Okay, I know what enchiladas are. I know what a red-white game is. What is a Chihuly?
A Chihuly is an artist who creates the most beautiful glass sculptures you've ever seen. And it's at the Arboretum. And if anything can compete with the natural beauty of the Arboretum, this is it.
So it's a temporary exhibit.
It's a temporary installation.
Installations, they're outside.
Correct. And it's already beginning to go up. So if you sneak in this week before May 5th, you can get a glimpse of some of it that's already there. It's just going to be beautiful.
It's really pretty. I've gotten to see a couple of them. They're very pretty. It's going to be fun. And here's my favorite thing about the Chihuly exhibit, which is starting this Saturday and it lasts until November 5th. It's that the Arboretum is going to open up at night a lot more than it typically does. And you can walk through the gardens at night and see the glass sculptures lit up, which is a wonderful thing for a couple of reasons. One, for those of us who work and can't get there during the day a lot, and then it's hard to go on the weekends because, my word, everyone goes on the weekend. You can't even drive down Garland Road these days. But
everyone goes on the... Let's not go. Let's see. It's a Yogi Berra thing. Yeah. Everyone goes. No, it's too crowded.
No one
goes there anymore on the weekend.
Yes, never mind. No one goes. But at nighttime, and I mean, please, please, please let us not have as hard of a summer as we had last summer. But it's also going to be much cooler in the gardens at night during Chihuly night. I think it's, I'll double check this, but I think it's 6 to 10 p.m. Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays for a while, which is exciting. I'm excited about that. Plus the concert. You know, you can go see the concert and you can go see the Chihuly sculptures. And
the concerts at the Arboretum are really fun. They book really fun bands to come.
They do.
If you haven't done that, it's really fun.
Yeah. We'll link to those, the concerts, the exhibit, all that stuff on the website. I don't think I have any other shameless plugs. A lot going on this weekend, though.
Yeah.
It's getting to be that time of year again.
Cinco de Mayo.
Really, oh, Cinco de Mayo. Is that why Enchiladas is doing it this
weekend?
Yes. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Well, thanks for listening to Advocate Radio and the Lake Highlands podcast. We'll be back soon with some other fun things to discuss about the neighborhood.